The summer heat has hit, and weather like this can make you painfully aware of how poorly insulated your home is, especially when you get that electric bill. So what do you do with those old drafty windows? You replace them or fix them up? It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking home improvement with our expert Bill McAnally. We'll talk about rehabilitating elderly windows, window treatments, and replacement options. This is also the time of year to attack big outdoor projects. If you live on a farmstead, what do you do with those outbuildings that are on the verge of tumbling down? We also want to know what you're working on this summer. Call and get some advice before you tackle your next big project. The number to call is 866-780-9100. It's Home Improvement on the Talk of Iowa, coming up after this news. It's Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Many of us sweltering at home this week are suddenly very aware of how drafty our windows are. Today, we'll explore our options for replacement and repair with our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, on the line from Fort Dodge. Hello, Bill.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good. Thank you so much for being here today.
You bet.
We also want your questions. What are you working on this summer? If you need guidance, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. So, Bill, I just moved into a 110-year-old house, so the idea of drafty windows is very much on my mind right now. But recently, I've heard some talk about it being a better idea to actually repair those original windows than replace them. What are your thoughts on that?
It really depends on, you know, what you're going after. If you, if you're looking at the historical significance of the home, or if you're trying to maybe keep the costs down, you know, a lot of times it may be better to repair that. There are some really good repair kits out there right now. And, you know, I don't know, is your home, does it have brick or, you know, wood siding? Or
no, it's an old wood farmhouse. Actually, the siding has been redone in aluminum siding, but all of the original windows are there. And actually, before we moved in, they had repaired all the ropes and weight systems on all the windows. So they're all functional, which is a huge, huge bonus.
Well, it's nice that they work, I guess. the only downside, you know, to those are, you know, of course, where the weights are, for them to be functional, you know, you have to have a lot of space. And the window's probably working just fine at keeping the weather out. It's just around the window sash and in that jamb, because, you know, you have probably 2 to 3 inches of space on each side of the window behind the trim where that weight goes up and down. And, you know, that's just basically open wall, and that's where probably 90% of your breeze is coming through. You know, that's where you have to make a decision. And if you already have, you know, fairly decent siding on the house, especially aluminum, aluminum's usually a little tougher to, you know, say, go ahead and replace your window. Because aluminum and steel, if they're outside, of course, that they fade. And if you're going to make the window opening any smaller, or if you have to patch any of your siding, boy, it's just going to stand out like a neon sign, because the siding won't match. And, you know, even if you keep some in your garage, it, you know, people have done that. They've, you know, we'll save some siding in case it gets damaged. Well, that's good, except that sitting up in the garage, it doesn't fade. So, you know, you really have to kind of look at that whole package. A lot of people with an old home like that, if they still have the wood siding, they might say, well, you know, I'm going to ahead and pull that siding off and put new siding on and insulate and put on house wrap. And you know, that might be the best time to put on new windows. But in your case, you know, you really have to look at your utility bills and see, are they really, really high? How much of my energy loss is from the windows? Majority of it may be of, you know, poor heating and cooling system, or, you know, the ductwork design, something like that. But, you know, especially for historical significance, a lot of times it's better to go ahead and repair, especially if the trim work on the inside is, you know, is brittle, and you want to be sure and keep it looking original.
Well, we just got an email from David who wants to talk about fixing a leaky window. He says, do I need to remove the window and siding and redo the flashing?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Especially if it's leaking any kind of water at all, that's the downside of of some of the older windows is the water will come down, especially if it's had newer siding put over the old siding. The water will get behind, you know, wind will drive the water through the aluminum siding or vinyl or whatever. It'll drive it through, and then it's trapped between the old siding or the old sheeting and the new siding, and then it finds a, it's pretty sneaky how it finds its way into your window, and then it starts to rot, you know, the whole frame, the whole jam out around the sash. If you're going to really, you know, if you're going to replace that window, sometimes that's the best place to make a change to the exterior is above that window. You may have to be kind of creative with how to trim out the aluminum or whatever siding you had on the outside. You might have to put a decorative piece above the window, but you really want to look at when the water comes down behind that siding, where is it going to go? So you may have to put some flashing, some metal flashing, up above that window to divert that water so that it comes out sometimes on the older windows, so it comes out over the face of the outside of the window, so you try to keep it away from getting inside.
He also wants to know who he should call to fix it. Should he call a contractor or a window company?
Well, I'd call a contractor, a remodeling contractor. Window companies, it depends on what they do. Some of them only, you know, install replacement windows. Some of them will come out and repair. It's almost getting to be kind of a cottage industry, the old window repairs. I would maybe do some research, ask the local lumber yards, you know, in your area, ask them, okay, who's kind of the person that you would recommend working on an older home, not throwing in new windows, but that has the, you know, the ability to work on a 100-year-old window and repair it and not destroy the thing, or just, hey, you know what, let's just throw in some replacements. It may be that you have to do that, you know, that maybe they're too far gone, and that's when you will talk to a, you know, more of a window specialist, you know, one that installs replacement windows, where they'll use the existing framework and then install a new window inside that framework so it looks exactly the same, but it isn't the old original. But still, they still have to treat where those weights are at.
Dave is on the line from Cascade. He called 866-780-9100. Hello, Dave.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Very good.
Good.
Good. Well, I'm a styrofoam recycler and a company called Instyro. And we have created a product with a very very finely shredded styrofoam. Or not finely shredded, but less than a quarter inch. And we put a coating of a tacky adhesive on the styrofoam, and so we basically use it to we pull the trim off of windows, especially in old buildings, and we stuff it in the space, and since it's tacky, it really holds its shape and stays in there, and it really does a great job of cutting the drafts, since so much of the drafts come from, you know, around the window encasement, and there's a lot of open space in old buildings and around floors and that kind of thing.
So basically, you're kind of doing the same thing as like the old wet spray cellulose. You're just making big spit wads out of styrofoam rather than newspaper.
Yeah, it stuffs really well. And exactly. It's almost like you're stuffing newspaper in there, except styrofoam's a great insulator.
Sure.
And it really sticks together, and when you press it, it recovers its shape, so it really fills the space real well. It's cheap, and it's easy, and it's not, you know, it doesn't smell like the styrofoam spray and that kind of thing. It's a good product. It's, like I said, it's new. It's just hitting the market. I'm actually the founder of the company. I'm heading to a recycling conference right now to give a presentation, and that's part of it.
What's the name of the product again?
It's called Pack and Press Foam.
Okay,
now, I'm sure you haven't heard of it, and you can see a little bit of information about it at Instyro.com.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Dave. Thank you so much, and good luck to you.
Well, thank you very much. Have a great day.
Yeah, thanks.
Yep, bye-bye.
We have one more question about windows before we move on to some of the other topics. Mike says, we moved into a house that was built in 1991 and has casement windows. When it comes time to replace the narrow casements, would it be cost prohibitive to replace them with traditional wider sash windows?
It depends on the price. You know, they all go by the rough opening. And that's the difference. A lot, you know, I think if they're very narrow, it would probably be more cost effective to go with a wider sash. And
okay.
You know, I think he's talking about maybe going to a double hung type window, so he's getting away from that vertical line that when you look out a window going towards more of a horizontal line where the two sashes bypass.
Well, yeah, my experience with casement windows is that they break down a lot.
Okay. Yeah, I like casements.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. The battle's on now. Well, yeah, the reason that I like casements is because we've had less air leakage around them than double hungs, and but double hungs are getting there. They're getting a lot tighter, but it all depends on maintenance. And
yeah, well, and the ones that I've had the most trouble with, my parents live in a very old farmhouse, and they replaced all of their giant, 6-foot windows with casement windows, and they just, because of, I think, the weight of the window, they have broken down a lot.
Oh, yeah, that's, I'm glad you bring that up, because when they're, let's say 40 inches, 48 inches tall, they're not so bad, but yeah, you get into these 5-foot, 5-inch casements, that's a heck of a lot of a weight, especially when you open it up and then you expect them to hold up into any kind of wind.
Right.
And they're bouncing around out there. No, you're right.
Yeah, I think they're looking at replacing again. I think they're going to head back the other direction. Tony is on the line from Des Moines, and he's got a question about compact fluorescent bulbs. Hello, Tony.
Yes, good morning, all. In 1987, we installed recessed lighting, and these cans have an electronic temperature switch sensor that will cut off power if for safety reasons.
Right.
And a few years back, we installed some compact fluorescent bulbs in these cans. And after about a year, the fixture stopped working. And I'm wondering, have you heard anything about ballasts in compact fluorescent bulbs interfering with these safety sensors?
No, I haven't, because I have those in my house, because I had to do the same thing as you. I had regular bulbs in there, the high temperature, and they all of a sudden click,
right.
They're shut off.
Right.
But no, since the fluorescents run so much cooler, they don't shut off anymore. But I haven't. Hopefully, maybe somebody out there listening has heard something. But no, I haven't heard or even read anything on that affecting that sensor. That's a good question.
Or maybe something else is affecting that sensor.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, it's a good question.
All right. Well, thank you for your input.
Yeah. Good luck, Tony.
Thanks. Bye bye.
Thank you very much for your call, and you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, and you can also send us an email anytime.
Did you see how tactful I was on that window topic?
That was,
I was using my soft skills there. I've been trained.
I appreciate that, since we're new to this relationship. Oh, the email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We are here today with our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. We've already found one difference in opinions, but I think we'd probably want to bow down to his opinions over mine. You're listening to Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Home Improvement Day on Talk of Iowa, and we're here today with home improvement expert Bill McAnally on the line from Fort Dodge. And we're taking your calls at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Bill Millie is on the line now from Wesley. Hello, Millie.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
I was told that I should put black plastic or any kind of plastic under the deck. There's nobody going to be under there. It's, we're going to put up things on the side to keep the animals and stuff out. But why do I need to do that?
Well, one thing it'll do is it'll help just keep the weeds and the grass down. Is pretty much it. If you're going to put any plastic, make sure it is black. Because if any sun gets under there, black doesn't break down so much under UV light. But a lot of times what we'll do is put black plastic underneath the deck, and it also helps keep the water, from getting whatever water you get through the deck from pooling underneath there, and then mosquitoes, because it's going to be dark. So put the plastic to help shed the water away from the house and out towards past the front of the deck. And normally people will put maybe an inch or two of gravel or pea rock over the top of it. But it mostly it's just to keep, you know, the bugs and the mosquitoes and that from accumulating in any weeds or anything. So it's you have zero maintenance then underneath the deck. It's a lot easier for you.
All right, Millie, good luck with that. We have Danielle on the line now from Woodward. Hello, Danielle.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I'm going to put Bill on the spot because I'd like him to help negotiate a domestic...
Uh-oh.
Not a dispute, but just getting information.
Okay.
I'm very impressed with the quality of those solar tubes that you can put through your roof and bringing light into dark areas of the house. And they've
right.
got some that will even have vent fans, and you can get a little solar gain, and now there's a 30% tax credit
mm-hmm.
if you get the right kind. Rightly so, my husband is concerned that they leak. He is saying that they're very similar to the skylights that leak notoriously. I'm wondering about your experience. Do they leak? Can you find some?
I'm trying to figure out which way you're playing me on this one. I don't...
It does sound a little bit like a setup.
Well, I want a contractor's opinion.
Well,
do they leak?
You know what? The good brands, they're very, very tight.
Okay.
It's the same thing with good skylights. When you buy a top-notch brand, I think the last ones we put in were Velux or Velux.
Mm-hmm.
And we had five of them right next to each other. They don't leak at all because they have very good flashing systems.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with these solar tubes. If they're installed correctly, and that's the key, you really have to read that set of directions because some builders aren't used to that
mm-hmm.
shape, I guess. You know, we're used to dealing with squares and angles, and then you throw something
sure.
around in the mix. But a lot of times that moisture comes from where the tube goes through the attic space.
Okay.
That's the key because a lot of times there'll be condensation around that if it's not insulated correctly because,
uh-huh.
you know, it seemed to forget that the inside of that tube, you know, will be the same temperature or probably slightly higher than, you know, the room that's below it. And if it isn't insulated correctly around the outside of that tube, you'll get condensation and then that'll run down the outside of the tube down through your insulation, and it comes out at the ceiling, and then it looks like, hey, this thing's leaking.
Sure.
And it's really the condensation.
What do you like as an insulating material in the attic space?
Well, it's going, you know, I really like foam myself
mm-hmm.
in that particular case, but each brand shows you how to insulate it. Some of the brands come with a wrapped type of kind of like a vinyl,
mm-hmm.
and then there's fiberglass and then vinyl. It's like a big wrap
okay.
that would put around. It looks just like the insulation you put around a duct.
Sure.
And it just depends on the brand, but I would, you know, really do my research on how those are insulated and especially their flashing systems at the roof.
Now, you mentioned the Velux, and my brother has great experience with that, actually installed his own.
Yeah.
We would probably hire a roofing contractor. Would we be better to hire a roofing contractor or a general contractor to do that?
Probably in this case, probably a general contractor because he has enough experience to go through the roof. But, you know, he's going to know better how to finish it off on the
sure.
inside and go through the rafters.
Well, that makes good sense.
Mm-hmm.
Great response. Thank you very
okay.
much for your help.
You bet.
All right. Good luck,
bye-bye.
Danielle. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have another email. This is from Ellen. She says, we have paint peeling off on a few spots of our steel siding on the south side of our house. Can we paint those areas? And if we can, how do we do it?
Yeah, you can paint those. What you want to do is go to your paint store and I tell them exactly the situation. Maybe if you can take some chips of that paint, take that to wherever you're going to get the paint from, and then they will tell you what kind of primer and cleaner you're going to have to get to go ahead and make sure that it's going to adhere. There's something wrong there for that to be peeling, you know, off of a steel siding. Something's working on it to either... For that paint to lose its adhesion on that metal, it was either not prepped correctly, you know, at the factory, or something's working on that to make it peel like that. So, I would take some pictures and go to the paint store because they're going to have to figure out how are we going to make our paint stick to that problem spot, and if there is a problem, what is it?
All right. Well, Eric is on the line from Waterloo. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
What's your question today?
Well, I've got cracks in my basement floor, which are not normally a problem until the water table comes up.
Okay.
Do you know anybody who can help me with a problem like that?
Well, you've got to relieve that hydraulic pressure. Do you have a sump pump in the basement right now?
Oh, not really.
Okay. That would, you know, the best thing you're going to do is probably install a sump pump system in there to drop that water table down, you know, below the floor. Because, you know, when we get these heavy rains, that water table starts to rise.
Well, here's the thing. It only happened just last week when we had the heavy rains. And the last time it happened was in 2008.
Okay.
When, we're just the other side of the dike here in Waterloo, and the water looked like it was going to crest the dike for a minute.
Ooh.
But we haven't had any trouble, and it only comes up maybe half an inch.
Okay. Yeah, I would still do that. I have some relatives that have that same problem, and it would go years and years and then nothing. And then it seems like it comes up when either they're not home and then they got a bunch of stuff laying on the floor.
Well, we're never going to finish the basement because that fact, it's just a waste of money.
Okay. Well, you can try some hydraulic, cements in the crack. The Thoreau company makes some that will stand a little bit of pressure, but hydraulic pressure is really tough to fight.
All right. With a situation like that, you know, when it only happens once every couple of years, do you just accept it and clean it up?
I don't like that issue at all, because if you ever want to sell it or anything, that's going to be on your disclosure statement, and if you go ahead and put a sump pump in, which you can do yourself, you dig a pit and through the floor and drop that water table down, at least you've made an effort to remedy the situation. That's the way I always look. I just don't like having that moisture inside the house either, because once that moisture's in there, it's going to evaporate usually to the rest of the house, and I don't really like having that high moisture load inside the house.
The having cracks in the basement floor, does that bring up any questions about radon?
Iowa has the highest average in the country, but the radon will still come through that concrete, even if it was a perfect non-cracked floor, it goes through concrete like it's not there. The gas, because concrete, of course, if we fall down and smack our head on it, it's pretty hard, but, it's not really that dense that gas can't go through it. So, and I doubt if the house, I don't know, how old is the house?
Just a minute. There was some noise there, so here he is. Eric, how old is the house?
About 50 years old.
Yeah, so there's no plastic underneath the floor, so, and our water tables are changing with all these years. We've had this kind of series of wet years. So, that's what I would do is I would put a sump pump in there.
If I put a sump pump in, what would I do with the water that the sump pump brings up?
You can dump it out in your own yard, try to get it at least 50 feet away from the house, or tie it directly into the storm sewer system.
All right, Eric, good luck with that. You're listening to Home Improvement Day with Bill McAnally on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. You can send us an email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPRTalk, or, of course, you can give us a call. The number is 866-780-9100. We'd love to hear what you're tackling this summer. This is Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Home Improvement Day today, and we have our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, on the line from Fort Dodge. We'd love to take your questions at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPRTalk, or you can send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And, Bill, we have Ron on the line from Cedar Rapids with a snow question, which not very many people are thinking about.
Good.
Hi, Ron.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem. What's your question?
We have a mid-50s, really well-built, L-shaped ranch house with a 312 pitch roof in the midst of a real heavy, mature oak timber. Shingles weren't lasting, so we put on standing seam metal roofing from the same manufacturer that Bill has talked about with his Decra metal roofing last fall.
Okay.
Over the winter, we had a lot of problems with the snow sliding off and falling from the door, the garage door, et cetera. I've been asking around to try to get some information about snow guards or snow jacks, and even the manufacturer doesn't seem to have any definitive information. Do you have any suggestions?
On the Decra roof, you mean, that they don't have, Decra didn't have any snow guards or anything?
Well, it's not Decra. It's another metal sales
product. Oh,
it's
a standing seam. Okay.
Standing seam. And they sell a snow guard, but it's just a solid metal bar that screws into each of the standing seams.
Yeah, I know exactly.
And with all the debris that we have from these oak trees, that would just make, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to go to a metal roof and a standing seam was to get rid of some of the problems with all that tree debris from the oaks.
Right.
And just putting a solid bar across there is just going to make that worse.
Yeah, it will. That's exactly what we had out at the college, was that same bar, and, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, it seems to catch stuff. I've seen them up north on standing seam metal roofs. It looks like a triangle,
right,
that they screw down on the flat part of the metal. And they're probably, yours are probably, what, 12 inches apart or 16
right.
inches? Okay, 12. 12s? Okay,
12,
so
yes.
They put one in about 3 inches, maybe about a foot up from the bottom, and then another one at 6, but it's uphill about 6 inches, and then another one down, so kind of a delta shape, kind of a triangular shape, but there's 3 separate ones.
Oh.
And so what they do is they kind of catch the ice, but yet the debris can go right around, or the debris doesn't get hung up on a solid piece like that bar.
Right, right.
And I'm sure they, you know, that say like out in Colorado, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and, you know, Michigan, those areas, they should be able to answer that. I'm surprised that the people from the factory couldn't, but I have seen those up north. I've seen up around Ely and Duluth.
Mm-hmm. I think I've seen what you're talking about, too. What I've seen is an adhesive clear acrylic that is kind of pyramid-shaped.
Mm-hmm.
It goes in the valley between the seams.
There you go.
And then, do you know for sure, we have 2-foot eaves. Do you know whether those snow guards or snow jacks or whatever you want to call them should be inside the wall space or outside of the wall space?
Well, that's a real good question, because
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I still think I would. It depends on. It really depends on how much heat loss you get and how much ice dam issues you get.
Mm-hmm. Well, we did add blow-in insulation when we were doing this project last fall, and we got as much in there as we could, and we put scoops in every single rafter space, so it's as ventilated about as well as it can be.
Okay.
And then, of course, ridge vents.
I think the play. So
we still had some melting over the occupied space, inside the wall space.
Sure.
From heat loss.
I think I'd still, you could look at it two ways. The only reason I'm thinking to put it all the way down to the bottom is if you do get the ice dam, you know, it's going to occur over that area. And it would probably, since it's a 312 pitch, you said? Your
That's
roof?
Right.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's a shallow pitch. It would probably occur down there anyway. It's just that way it gives you a little bit more space. If you do start getting a build up, that it won't reach the warm space as easily to melt and come in. I could see somebody, kind of looking at it 100% the other way, and I probably have to agree with them as well, is if you put it over the top of the heated airspace, you know, if you do have any heat loss, it's still going to go down and drip.
Mm-hmm.
I still would put it down at the bottom.
Okay.
Yeah, I would. Because if there ever is any issue, at least that's away from your living space.
All right. Well, good luck with that project, Ron. And we have another question about ventilation and roofs. MJ sent us an email and says that we live in an older house that was built without ventilation in the attic area. We replaced the roof recently and have a ridge line vent, but there are no soffits. What can we do to get rid of the heat that builds up in the attic?
Well, there has to be the amount of air that's supposed to go out the ridge vent has to be able to come in from somewhere. So whoever installed that roof has to be able to make up some air to go out that roof. If we get any kind of a breeze blowing across the house, you get kind of this Venturi effect, you know, like blowing over the top of a pop bottle. It'll lift the air out of the attic. And, well, if there's no spots like at the overhang where they've, you know, if they have an overhang for air to come in, then it's going to be pulling it out of the house, which can cause a negative pressure inside the house, cause all kinds of issues. But, you know, what it's going to do is if it's in the winter, it's going to pull heated air out of the house. And, you know, you're heating it, it's just going to go in the attic and cause probably more issues than if you wouldn't have even had it vented. But I would have that whoever the roofing contractor come back, and there's going to have to be the same amount of square footage of ventilation space, air at the soffit or overhang to be able to come into the attic.
Okay. Well, attics are just going to be hot, though.
They're going to be hot. Yeah, they are. And, you know, there's two different trains of thought as well as on attic ventilation. Some people believe in attic ventilation and some don't. There's an argument either way. I've done a lot of houses where we don't have any attic ventilation, and the shingles last just as long as or longer. Just depends what house you look at as ones with attic ventilation. So it's a touchy subject, especially when you get a bunch of builders together.
I had no idea there was so much controversy on
it. It's a big one. It's it's kind of almost a fist fight type of situation. I'm telling you.
I'll remember not to bring it up when I'm in a group of builders.
Yeah, don't bring that up. Stay away from it.
All right. You're listening to Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 866-780-9100. Send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have Mary on the line from Dyersville. Hello, Mary.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have an older house, like 90 years old, and I had some replacement double pane windows put in. And this is the original and the next batch, and this is the third group they put in, and they fog up here and there. Is this the cause of maybe the faulty manufacture, or is all of this type of windows faulty?
Well, are they fogging up between the window panes?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would get a hold of that representative.
This is the third time.
Now, does it, you know, since you've had it in different batches,
mm-hmm.
Is it just the third batch that does it, or do all of them do it?
Well, they all did. The original fogged up, and then I had them... They sent me replacements, and I had the labor, paid for the labor to put them in.
Okay.
Then that batch fogged up, and so then the representative came last summer, and he himself put all of these windows in. But now I see in different spots they fog up and get smoky.
Yeah, you're going to have to get tough, I think. Yeah, this is the case where, you know, it... They're going to have to find the reason why they're doing this.
They must leak or something.
Well, something's wrong because they shouldn't be fogging. The only time that you ever see that happen is if there's any way that air can get in from outside or inside the house, in between those two panes.
Well, do they have manufacturers that make them for all different companies and then just put the different brand names on?
Some of them do. Some of them do, but you're gonna have to get somebody higher up than that guy out, and you're gonna have to be tough with them.
Okay, I can do that.
Okay, there you go.
Thank you much.
Yep.
Good luck, Mary.
Thanks.
We now have Betsy on the line in Fairfield. Hello, Betsy.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I also have an older house. It was built about 1890, Victorian, and my problem is that the basement. Musty. It's kind of like a cellar. There are two rooms under the central part of the house, and then there's kind of a crawl space which got filled up at some point with some sort of... somebody said it was like a newspaper that was ground up.
And cellulose?
Yeah, something like that. I mean,
okay.
And then, so that's kind of there in one part. Now, this is not a cellar that I go into a lot because it's... dark and creepy. I mean, the furnace is down there in the hot water, but, you know, I don't venture forth, so I've not really explored. But the problem now is that my house smells musty when I leave and close the doors and then come back.
Sure.
And I don't really know how to, where to begin with this problem. You know, cleaning upstairs, should I use a bleach solution? Should the ducts be cleaned? I have a forced hot air heating system with a HEPA filter on it.
Okay. Well, I tell you, so that cellulose is in a crawl space?
Well, it's sort of a crawl space. I mean,
but it can get wet, can it?
Well, probably. You know, the house in the front has kind of a bay window, and that space, the crawl space where the cellulose is under the living room, actually,
okay.
Where I'm standing now, and it seems to be the worst here. And they're block cinder block walls between that part of the crawl space basement, and within those cinder block walls, there are two sort of window size openings.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I can sort of see in, if I'm really brave, that, you know, I'll go down and look that, that seems to be what's there. And a time or two,
yeah.
You know, utility guys have come, cable guys or whatnot, and they say, oh, yeah, that's what's going on in there.
Well, in an area, so you can look at dirt?
No.
Oh.
I cannot look at dirt there because it's covered with this cellulose. Is that
okay.
It, material?
That's your problem then. That's not the place for a cellulose product.
Okay.
Hopefully there's plastic over what's underneath it before this stuff was blown down.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I have no idea when this was done. Now, I also noticed that, you know, the floorboards and the joists go across. They're hanging down sections of that fiberglass, paper-backed kind of.
Yeah, you've got a real mess there.
I know. so I can't stand to go and look at it.
Are you familiar with the university down there at all?
Which,
in Fairfield?
The MUM campus?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
They have
yes.
Their instructor down there. There's an instructor there that does carpentry and does building trades, and he's doing some of the remodeling on campus.
Uh-huh.
I would get a hold of him.
Okay.
I'm not going to say his name, but you can get a hold of him.
No, you have to tell me. I don't know who he is.
Well, you call the university and ask him who's in charge of, like, sustainable energy.
Okay.
And the guy's brilliant.
Okay.
Give them a call.
Okay.
And I bet he would come out and take a look at it. He's a lot closer than
yeah.
anybody there. But this guy really knows his stuff.
Great. I just haven't really known where even to begin. So I really appreciate.
Yeah, I'd start with him. The guy is really sharp. He's one of the top ones in Iowa.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Bet.
All right. Best Bye-bye. Of luck, Betsy.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
The number to call is 866-780-9100. Passing the buck there, Bill.
Yes, and that's why I didn't say his name. I bet I'll hear from him in a few minutes.
All right. We have Laura on the line in Marion. Hello, Laura.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I bought a house a few months ago, and there's a back deck. It's pretty good size. You can get a table and chairs on it, but it's unfinished. And so I'm wondering if it's better to have the wood treated or if I can just leave it as it is.
What kind of wood is it?
That's a good question, and I'm not sure.
Is it kind of greenish?
It's kind of gray, honestly.
Kind of gray?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably treated. You may be able to. Can you look underneath it at all?
It's kind of the same as one of your previous callers, where it's really difficult to get underneath.
Oh, okay.
There's the plastic and all that.
Well, sometimes you can see some print. Maybe one of the boards still has some print on it.
Okay.
Black lettering, and then that usually will tell you what kind of wood it is. But I'm guessing it's probably treated. That was the majority of them. But you know, I would seal that treated wood. Otherwise, it's just going to keep checking and it'll dry. And you know, even though it's treated lumber, I think we sometimes forget that it's treated, but it's not treated very much. And
sure.
And if you really leave this out and it gets wet, it starts to rot pretty fast, especially
okay.
around where the nails or screws are. So I would clean it. You know, get a deck cleaner, follow the directions explicitly. And then either put a clear sealer on it or a tinted sealer.
That sounds great. Thank you very much.
All right.
You bet.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
A lot, Laura. We also have Bob on the line now in Johnston. Hello, Bob.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a 10-year-old walkout ranch that faces south. It's about 1,800 square feet on the main floor, and I need to put a roof on it because of some pretty severe hail damage. And I'm wondering if it's worth paying an additional $3,500 or $4,000 to put the new Energy Star rated high reflectivity shingles on it to reduce the heat gain on the house during the summer.
I wouldn't. I would go maybe with a lighter color shingle.
Right. Well, we've already got about the lightest gray that the area allows, so we've done that. The house is super insulated, and I'm having a hard time figuring that the payback would really come at any time in my lifetime just from heat gain.
It might, you know, looking at those numbers, maybe, well, even if you didn't figure interest in, it'd probably take you at least 100 years.
Well, and I really wanted to get some of Mr. Obama's federal tax credit money, but even then,
no.
If your house is
insulated well, I wouldn't do it. If you know, it'd be different if it was an older home that was insulated poorly, and you're trying to, you know, utilize those funds. But I can't. Boy, that's a lot of money to try to get. You're never going to get back on energy savings.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you.
You bet.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bob. You know, I recently went through that same process, and I looked at the more expensive high reflectivity shingles, and also the lightest color of the other kind of shingle that we could get. Is there much difference between the brand that's supposed to reflect light and the lightest color that you can get that's not specifically designed for that?
In Iowa, using it in Iowa, no. Not really. The studies haven't borne that out, that it's going to make that much difference.
All right. We have an email from Lionel, who is in Moline, Illinois. He says, I'd be interested in hearing your comments on this subject. We have a 100-year-old home, or older than 100 years, and I'd like to insulate the attic with foam between the rafters. Is it likely that any local municipalities with building codes recognize unvented attics in their codes?
Yes, they do now. They recognize spraying foam in between the rafters directly against the roof deck is okay in all the building codes now, and especially all of Iowa is underneath the International Energy Conservation Code. Whether you're in a municipality or in the country or wherever, that is the energy efficiency standard for the whole state, and that's a very good way to insulate a home. We'll start seeing a lot more of that.
Okay.
So he's okay. Now, the local, you got to remember, though, the local building inspector still has that, jurisdiction, and he may argue, but, I mean, you can always take that to a higher level.
All right. We have one more email, and that's from Max. He says, is there a product that will restore cedar siding? Mine's 20 years old and was never treated, and it's dry and curling.
Ooh. Well, if it's curling, you're not going to get it back. And I was told a long time ago that if you leave cedar out even for 2 days before you're going to paint it, that you're going to have to lightly sand it again before you paint, that it kind of breaks down that fast, you know, or it gets a little dust over the top. That's a very good question to email to the Forest Products Laboratory in Madison, Wisconsin. That's what they do for everybody in the United States. If you have questions about wood, specifically, you know, a question exactly like that, is that's what they're mandated to do, is to answer those kind of questions. And I would just email them that question and maybe send them some pictures, and they'll get right back with you. That's what their staff does.
All right. Well, Max, good luck with that. And Bill, before we go today, another question that I have with my 110-year-old property and house. We have a couple of outbuildings, and they're built with oak planks, but they're on the verge of tumbling down. And, you know, the wood is beautiful, and it seems a shame to let it go to a landfill or something like that. But apparently, the local Amish families that do a lot of that kind of deconstruction work won't use oak wood because it's too hard to get the nails out. So what do we do?
I would salvage every piece of that wood. I know it's hard to get the nails out, but it's going to be really hard to justify throwing or burning that thing down. I mean, we're in the middle of a deconstruction grant with the state of Iowa right now, trying to have zero landfill. And that's the exact kind of project that we have to find somebody to be able to utilize all that wood.
So
don't tear it down till you call me.
Okay. but how would I go about trying to find somebody to use
the Iowa Waste Exchange? They have a website that if you took pictures of the building, that they will post that, and then a lot of people get on there and they, hey, you know, I'd like to have that, and they'll come down and take it down for you and salvage it.
Oh, wonderful! Because you know, it's beautiful wood, but we can't have buildings that are on the verge of falling down with two small children running around and exploring. And
And insurance companies don't like the don't like that either. But the Iowa Waste Exchange, Shalene Codner, is a good contact for that.
All right. Well, are you working on any home improvement projects this summer yourself?
Yeah, I'm trying to finish up the wedding pavilion that I was supposed to have done for the wedding. It was done enough to have the wedding in, but I'm still working on that, and I was going to send Dennis some pictures, and I've got to get those together yet. But no, I've got all kinds of projects around home.
All right.
Yeah, and they're not any fun when you're doing it for yourself.
Well, we will catch up again with you in a month. Bill, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. He's on once a month, and I hope you'll join us again next time. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Rosalind Sixby. We always welcome your comments at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed by and performed by Dan Knight. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up tomorrow on Talk of Iowa, it's Horticulture Day. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.